Thank you very much. Just as an aside, my father lived in the area of where your reservation is, Buckley, Michigan. And I can recall I had a hearing up there one time, or a meeting, and I had announced that I would be holding it on a sovereign territory of your tribe. And I found out at the beginning of the meeting we were in the wrong room, that the boundary line of your tribe at that time bisected a building, and this room was trust land, and this room was fee land. So I insisted then we move into the trust land. So things get a little complicated at times, but I can recall that hearing very, very, very much. Appreciate all your I know the Attorney General has to leave shortly, so if you do not mind, without objection from the rest of you, I will address the question to the Attorney General first. Not because of his title, although I respect that, but because of his schedule, which he has shared with us. Attorney General, you testified that the Indian Reorganization Act should only extend to those tribes federally recognized in 1934. Yet there are numerous tribes for whom Congress ratified treaties, had and were providing benefits to, but were allegedly not federally recognized in 1934. Please explain how the relationship with these tribes was terminated, given that Congress took no explicit action to terminate its authority over those tribes.
Well, I think, thank you very much for the question and for accommodating my schedule, and I do apologize that I may have to leave early, although I'll stay as long as I can. I believe either the Department of Interior or the Congress has to clarify what is meant by that term, federal jurisdiction, because as was observed earlier this morning, the court did not do so in its opinion. Justice Thomas, on behalf of the court, did not do so. Justice Breyer raised the issue in his concurring opinion. The court agreed as to the basic principle, and they correctly decided that principle. But the Congress could clarify that issue in the context of a broader measure. In my view, that issue would be mooted if it adopted the recommendation that I've made, which is that it take back authority for all of these fee into trust decisions. And if it doesn't, and if the current administrative process continues, then it should reform that process to provide notice, standards, adequate information, because right now there is none of the basic due process standards for communities, local governments, for state governments, not to mention for ordinary citizens. And I would just conclude by saying I accept the analogy to the surgical procedure that is necessary for someone coming into an emergency room. And there may be a need for immediate triage simply to stop the bleeding. But all the better if the surgical procedure is not a quick fix. And I think everyone testifying pro and con has referred to it as a fix. It is a quick fix that in the long term may do more harm than good. And I think that the medical analogy, again, would teach us, first do no harm. And if we're worried about litigation, I can predict to you 10 more years of crippling litigation in the wake of these two measures, because they leave the basic legal problems unresolved, one of which is involved in your question.
Thank you very much. The Chair recognizes the ranking Republican member of this committee, Mr. Hastings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to follow up on the questioning, if I can, General Blumenthal. You mentioned in your oral testimony that the process is lawless, and you somewhat reiterated that within Department of Interior. Is the solution to that statutory or administratively, in your view?
Excellent question, sir, and I think it is both. And I could expound at greater length, but let me try to be as brief
as possible. Do it briefly, but submit, if you would, for the record, some specifics. But if you would, please.
I'll be happy to. The statute right now is exceedingly vague. The IRA says that the Secretary of Interior may take land into trust, quote, for the purpose of providing land to Indians, period. End of quote. End of statement of purpose. The regulations are equally, in a sense, open-ended because the Secretary has limited his discretion, or one would say has expanded his discretion, by saying that any of his regulations, any of his standards, can be waived. He can waive or make exceptions to the regulations, quote, where permitted by law, and the Secretary finds that such waiver or exception is in the best interest of the Indian, period, end quote. Now, the Secretary of Interior is a trustee for the tribes. Legally, he has a responsibility. When land is taken into trust and when a tribe is recognized federally for the well-being of that land and that tribal nation, he is a trustee. He is responsible only to their interests. But as you've heard and you know from dealing with your own constituents, there are a lot of other interests involved in taking land into trust, loss of taxation authority, but even more important than the money, jurisdictional issues, criminal enforcement, environmental and other civil enforcement. So these decisions are exceedingly important, and right now in both law and regulation, I think, need clarification. And they are also procedurally defective because, again, states, citizens have difficulty getting any notice, any information, any voice in the process. So I think it's both.
Following up on that, and I know I'm asking you to answer a very in a broad way, but all the others, attorneys general that were involved in the Carcieri case and probably those that have communicated with you since then, do you think they, too, share a similar concern?
Very definitely, absolutely so, which is the reason why they feel so strongly about the Carcieri decision. Again, I would stress to you, sir, and to other members of the committee, if you look at the decision, and I can give you the names of the states, but they are Republican and Democrat attorneys general with very differing views on almost any other issue. They are across the nation geographically, ideologically, united or dissimilar in many respects, but united on this issue, and they strongly share these concerns.
Well, I said in my opening remarks that this is not a partisan issue, and that's evidenced by the fact that the sponsors of both the bills that we are having a hearing on today, one's Republicans and one's a Democrat. So I totally agree with you on that. And my concern in asking this is sometimes these opportunities afford us an opportunity or a decision afford us an opportunity to look more deeply at some of the problems, and so that's the reason for my line of questioning. And with that, Mr. Chairman, thank you very much, and I'll yield back.
Before I yield to the gentleman from New Mexico, just one brief comment. You mentioned that there seems to be a conflict within the Secretary's office of having a trust responsibility toward the Native Americans, and also obligated to watch out for their well-being. Well, that conflict exists throughout the federal government, exists in this Congress. I am part of that trust responsibility. The trust responsibility is not just with the executive branch of government. The trust responsibility is with the entire U.S. Congress, and that's been clear through the years. It is a trust responsibility where we are obligated to look out for their well-being. At the same, look out for them in that area. But also, we do have an obligation to see to their well-being as citizens of their nation, as citizens of their state, and as citizens of the United States. You know, you and I, Attorney General, we have two citizenships. I am a citizen, 80-year citizen of the state of Michigan. I'm an 80-year citizen of the United States. And that's it. But I believe the gentleman, Mr. Kanji, has three citizenships. He's not a tribal member, so we'll say George Bennett, your former chief. George Bennett has three citizenships. He's a citizen of the state of Michigan, has been not as long as I have been. He's a citizen of the United States, and members of that tribe have served dutifully in the armed forces. And he is a citizen of the tribes, the Grand Traverse Band of Ottawa and Chippewa. So the conflict you mentioned is going to stay there no matter what we do, no matter what legislation we write, how we restrict the secretary. That conflict of being both trustee and having another role with the Indians is there. I appreciate the fact, though, that you raised it, and you raised it to one of our most savant members right here, Doc Hastings, who will mull that over very, very carefully.
And may I just respond very, very briefly, and
absolutely.
I apologize. I would just say, with all due respect, sir, I recognize and respect the feeling of obligation that you feel and I share for the oppression and injustice that has been visited by our nation on Native Americans over our history, and the ongoing obligation to help address the concerns that have been raised here and the well-being that, again, we share a concern for addressing. But the legal obligation, as apart from that moral obligation, with the Secretary of Interior is different. It is the reason why he has been held, not this secretary, but the office of secretary, in contempt of court by a federal judge, because he has a trusteeship obligation that is different from yours and mine. So I agree with you that we have that obligation, but his legal obligation is a bit different, and I didn't mean to introduce that distracting element, but I think it raises the more important question of how do we strike a balance here? And the larger, very profoundly important questions that we need to get right if we're going to change the system, not through a quick fix that kind of puts a Band-Aid on that broken knee, but something that really addresses the broken knee.
I would say that I think the secretary, of course, is the most exposed and one to whom we assign specific responsibilities, so it's natural the attorney go after him or her. The gentleman from New Mexico.
I thank the gentleman from Michigan. I wanted to ask Attorney General Blumenthal a related question and sort of follow up on some of the questions that my colleagues have already made. I wanted to ask you to clarify a statement that you make in your written testimony, and you had said, tribes recognized after 1934 are unaffected by the failed federal policies of the IRA that the IRA was intended to correct. No post-1934 tribes lost land because of the General Allotment Act of 1887. Now, we've heard from representatives of several tribes that were either unrecognized in 1934 or had an uncertain recognition status in that year. However, these tribes also recount very damaging actions by the federal government that resulted in their tribes losing land prior to that year. I want to ask, is it really your assertion that these post-1934 tribes were unaffected by federal Indian policy prior to that date?
No, sir. I apologize if my statement gave you that impression, but the Carcieri Court, the United States Supreme Court in the Carcieri decision, said essentially one of the reasons why we believe it applies only to the tribes recognized or under federal jurisdiction now, meaning then in 1934, is that it very specifically was meant to remedy the problems created by that 1887 Act of Congress, the General Allotment Act. There's no question that policies prior to 1934 and after 1934 have created injustices and even immoralities that need to be addressed now by our nation. And one of the ways to do it is to put land into trust. But it should be by a system that is fair, accountable, and transparent. And I did not mean to suggest that there have been no problems in federal policy since 1934 or pre-1934 that would affect tribes recognized since.
I want to thank the general. I want to just make the point that as the witnesses here testified today, many tribes were unrecognized in 1934 because of harmful federal policies. And from my point of view, it hardly seems fair to declare that these tribes are outside the boundaries of the IRA simply because the federal government had been more successful in its efforts to dilute their land base than it was with other tribes. And with that, I would yield back to the gentleman from Michigan.
Before I yield to the ranking member, my father was born in 1883, and he can recall vividly a tribe in Michigan whose reservation was burned to the ground by the sheriff. The governor had put that land on the tax rolls illegally and without telling the tribe, and exactly 1 year and 1 day later, when the taxes were not paid, came in to push the Indians off their own land and then to make sure they did not return, burned the village to the town, to the ground. This was my dad's, he was a 17-year-old, remembered that all his life, and told us kids how unfair the Indians were treated. So they, in one sense, lost their land base in fact, but I don't think so in law. They lost their land base. They're still struggling now to get their land base back. And they're before the BIA right now, and they're looking at all the records, and the Catholic Church probably kept the best records of people who stayed there, even though their village had been burned down. So a lot of times land was lost, not by law, but by fact, and they're struggling to get that land back, and that's why we generally leave those things with the BIA to make that determination. But I'll yield to the gentleman from Washington. Thank you for your patience.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have no further questions, but I just want to say this is an immensely important decision, and I think that it is the responsibility, obviously, of this committee and this Congress to try to seek some sort of resolution to it. That being said, as I mentioned in my opening statements, there were a number of people obviously on both sides of the issue, and the Supreme Court has ruled that if we're indeed a country of laws, then we have to make sure that we get it right. But I, again, having representing a district that has two tribes, one, by the way, that is not recognized at all, I think we need a solution to this. So I look forward to working with you on this issue, and I want to thank all of the witnesses, especially those tribes from my state of Washington, although you're on the wet side of the state and I'm from the dry side of the state, and we won't go into all of that, but thank you for making the trip out here. Thank you very much.
And if I may just comment, Mr. Chairman, on behalf of the Attorneys General, we are very eager and willing and ready to continue participating in this process, working toward a common solution. We are not saying by any means there's no need for a solution. Let's just make sure it's the right solution that respects the needs of citizens and communities and towns and cities and states, as well as a fair process, and also that recognizes the past injustices and the need to deal fairly and effectively with the problems of Native American sovereign tribes that are recognized by the federal government. And I emphasize sovereign because that is a principle that we respect, and it's one of the reasons why we have to get it right when we make these changes in law.
Appreciate that, and as I mentioned before, you suggested, I think the ranking member requested a longer answer or a more fulsome answer, and we will leave the record open for probably. We'll leave the record open for another, say, 14 days, and we will allow ourselves 10 days further to submit questions to you.
Well, you know, Mr. Chairman, lawyers are always happy to give longer answers. So.
Very good. I'm a Latin teacher, so I don't know. let me ask Mr. Kanji a question. Do you believe that the legislation before us will have both a retroactive and prospective effect?
I do, Chairman Kildee, and I think that's critically important. I think the bills have been drafted both to provide the Secretary with the authority going forward to accord the protections of the IRA to all federally recognized tribes, but also to protect past secretarial decisions against litigation. And I think there seems to be a common feeling on the part of everyone in this room that the avoidance of litigation is critically important to all the sovereign governments affected here. And it does no one any good. It doesn't do the tribes any good, the state, the local units of the government, to spend years embroiled in the time and expense and uncertainty, most important, the uncertainty that is associated with litigation. I'm a litigator. I earn my living from litigating cases on behalf of tribes, but the last thing that the tribes in this country should have to do is to pay lawyers like me, firms like mine, in order to litigate the basic fundamental question as to whether all tribes are entitled to the foundational protections of the Indian Reorganization Act. The Attorney General well stated the principle that you shouldn't act in a way that does more harm than good, but it does no harm for this Congress to, in a very straightforward manner that's reflected in the pending bills, to just reaffirm the foundational principle that all recognized tribes stand on an equal footing in this country and are entitled to the same basic protections of the law as other tribes. As the Attorney General well knows and this committee well knows, the Supreme Court has, in the context of the sovereign states, announced as a fundamental principle over the years that the equal footing doctrine ensures that all the sovereign states stand on an equal footing regardless of the date of their admission into the Union. And essentially, the bills, the bill that you have sponsored and the bill that Representative Cole has sponsored, essentially embody that same equal footing principle. And yes, in response to your question, I believe they do so both retroactively and prospectively.
I will say that the Attorney General, Mr. Salazar himself, has gone over a letter to me supporting exactly this legislation word for word and feels that it is properly drafted. You're a litigator. Now I want to ask you, do you want a long letter or a short letter from this committee then, since the Attorney General has indicated? This has been a very good hearing. This is a subject that's very dear to this committee's heart. We are, in effect, the Indian Committee in the Congress. We don't have an Indian Committee as such, nor even an Indian subcommittee. But the full Committee of Natural Resources is the Indian Committee. So we have part of that trust responsibility, too. We want to be fair to everyone. We legislate for the citizens of the tribes, legislate for all citizens of the United States, and we want to be fair and abide by the Constitution, abide by the treaties. The Constitution also tells us this treaty, or this Constitution, and all treaties entered therein shall be the supreme law of the land. John Marshall indicated that includes Indian treaties. The Indian treaties are the supreme law of the land. Andrew Jackson did not quite believe that and pushed people to Oklahoma, many of them. But I do believe it. And as long as I'm chairman, I'm going to make sure that we recognize that the treaties are the supreme law of the land. And those other post-actions of recognizing sovereignty are also always been upheld by the Congress and by the courts. So I appreciate all of you. All of you have been very good. All of you have been straightforward with the committee, and all of you have spoken from your heads and your hearts. And Both are important. We want justice. All of us, I think, are seekers after justice, and we hope this committee can move us towards that justice. And without that, unless you have any further statements, we will stand adjourned, and there is another hearing in this room after we adjourn. So we will, as you say, send them questions in writing. We'll stand adjourned. Thank you. Good hearing.